Warning, this podcast contains discussions of an adult nature and sometimes a graphic nature. It's not suitable for children, strong language, and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, hello and welcome to The Witch's Grimm, stories and education with a witchy twist. If it's weird, we want to talk about it. So, pull up a broom. Holster that wand and get comfy, because we're about to get started. Hello and welcome to The Witch's Grimm. We love you guys so much. Thank you for joining us. I'm here today with my co-host and bestie, Lacey. And today we're going to cover an episode that I do want to give a trigger warning for. So the first trigger warning is that there is going to be talk of sexual abuse. The second trigger warning is that there is going to be talk of violence. And that is because we are going to be covering Charles Manson and the Manson family. So a lot of our stuff, as you guys know, longtime listeners know, we cover things that are witchy or spiritual related. And in the past, we have covered satanic panic, and we have also covered cults. And this one combines both, because Charles Manson is one of the reasons he and the Zodiac Killer and all types of crazy serial killers like him that were supposedly linked to the devil caused the satanic panic of the 1970s and 80s, or were a catalyst in the creation of satanic panic in the 70s and 80s. And he
used it as an excuse for why they did the things they did.
Yeah. When I watch these interviews, a lot of them have now turned to God and Jesus, and they are changed people. And it was like the devil made me do it. Zero responsibility. I think that all of them should have gotten the death penalty. I guess you guys already know how I feel about this whole situation. I watched interviews with the girls, and oh my God, from a psychological perspective, from a person who's a trained therapist, oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. Anyway. All right. So let's get into it. Let's talk about old Charlie Manson.
Okay.
So Charles Manson was born November 12th, 1934. So somebody in another video pointed out he was a Scorpio. I would say definitely some Scorpio energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. His mother was 16 when she got pregnant with him. So she met a guy named Colonel Scott. That was actually his name. His first name was Colonel. Because when I was first looking this up, I was like,
there's no way.
If he's a colonel in the military, like how much older is he than her? No, he was probably much older than her. But he was a laborer who was already married. She came from an extremely religious home. She had three other siblings. She went through her rebellious phase. She ran away to the big city to have herself a good time. And shortly after found herself pregnant. Because the dude was married, he was like, I'm not helping you. So she was left to her own devices in a big city, you know, not necessarily turning to her family, her super religious family. And so she ended up having Charles. He was actually born Charles Maddox. While she was pregnant, she met a Manson man. I don't remember his first name, but she ended up naming the baby after this dude. So Charles was going to be his name anyway, and she ended up giving him the last name of her current husband. Things didn't work out with that husband. She gets married several times. So that the relationships don't work out. So she was not a great mom. And Charles Manson's story of his childhood and his mom's story of his childhood are complete. Opposite. They could not be further from each other. It is crazy. I think that there's a mixture of both, honestly, because there's no way that you can believe everything that comes out of this freaking man's mouth.
Right.
But also there's no way that she's as innocent as she tries to pretend.
Oh, of course.
So there's one story, and obviously Charles Manson is not old enough to remember this, so it had to come from a source. So one source says that his mom was so neglectful that at one point while he was a baby, she went into a bar, she started chatting up the waitress, and she tried to convince the waitress to trade the baby for a pitcher of beer. And she actually left Charles Manson, I'm going to call him Charlie for this point. She left Charlie with this waitress for several days before she finally came back and got him.
Oh my God. Wow.
Now, obviously, mom is having a really hard time supporting a baby that she did want, obviously. So she's resorting to prostitution, which often leads to drugs and alcohol abuse to deal with the trauma of having to do that. And I'm not talking about choosing to be in sex work. I'm talking about you're forced to go into sex work can cause lots of trauma. Let's make the distinction there because we are sex positive on this podcast. And so she was supposedly a prostitute and she did some petty crimes. And when she did these petty crimes, she was eventually arrested. She ended up in prison. So I believe that Charlie was about 8 years old at the time when she ended up in prison. He ended up staying with his aunt and uncle. Again, very religious. Supposedly he had everything he could ever want for outside onlookers. Like I watched an interview about him and family friends and things like that talking about him. And they said that he had everything he could ever want, that they loved him, they took care of him. They had the money to support him and take care of him and do everything that they needed for him, but they made him go to church and he supposedly really, really hated going to church.
Imagine that.
He talked about, I did watch a little bit of an interview with him, like the very beginning of like a news story on him. And he talked about how he would go visit his mom. So this aunt and uncle would take him to go visit his mother and they would meet in the meeting room or whatever it was. And they would visit. He longed for his mother's love. That is a huge, huge thing that would be an ongoing issue for Charles Manson his whole life. So we can blame mommy issues. This was definitely a mommy issues. There was a lot of other trauma, allegedly according to him, mm-hmm. but there was definitely, like, both sides will tell you there were some mommy issues. So one of the people that he would actually go visit during his mom's stay in prison was this uncle that lived in the woods. And the reason that this is going to be relevant to the story is because this man had such an impression on young Charlie that Charles Manson would carry these teachings throughout the rest of his life. So to give you a little bit of an idea, I think that the family members were definitely prone to some mental health issues. This uncle lived off the grid, purposely in the mountains of Kentucky, away from society, would rant about how he's a rebel and that the rebels will win again. If you guys do not understand that reference, that is a reference to the Confederates, the South, the racists that wanted to keep slavery in play. So he was basically a huge, crazy racist living in the mountains and influencing a young child that would go and stay with him. And Charles Manson just thought he was the coolest thing ever. And this uncle said, don't you go going, he sounded a lot like you. Don't you go going to those schools. They're just filling your head with nonsense. They're brainwashing you. And shortly after this uncle told him this, Charles, because he was already having a little bit of acting out, which is normal when a kid loses his parent, you know, the parent's in prison. He's like feeling like he's wayward. You know, he's like not really finding a foundation. He really wants his mom. And he tries to burn down his school at 9 years old. That was his first major offense. Nine. Yeah. Cause I think his mom went to prison at 8. And so he, was like visiting this uncle and staying with his aunt and uncle during this time. So he's visiting with family. He's having contact with his other family members. And this is the messages that he's receiving.
Okay.
Yeah. So Charlie ended up being reunited with his mother. His mom would go through bouts of feeling guilty about not being with her son, even though she didn't want to be with him. So she was able to regain custody of Charlie, and she had him for a little while. And Charlie actually said that, or Charles Manson said that this was one of the happiest times in his life, is when he was reunited with his mom. But mom had found a new husband, because you guys got to remember, around this time in the 50s, there, like the 40s, 50s timeframe, women could not have credit cards. Women could not have their own credit card, purchase their own house, have their own bank accounts, yeah, unless they were married. This was until, I think it was the 1970s, was when women were first allowed to start having these things. So if you did not have a man in your life, lesbian or not, if you did not have a man in your life, you weren't getting shit. So mom found another husband. This husband ended up being a POS who didn't really like Charlie. They started to butt heads, and mom chose the husband. She couldn't find a foster home to put him in, so she put him in a Catholic school. So again, we have this religious, I want you guys to remember this, there's a religious theme that's going to go throughout this whole thing. So he hated Catholic school. He ended up running away. Then he ended up in and out of different reform schools and detention centers and schools. He ended up being sent to a famous school that was supposed to be really, really great. But the way that Charles Manson tells it, he ended up being sexually molested. He was raped multiple times by the leaders of this school, and he was beaten regularly. And because of this, after 10 months in this school that he was actually excited about going to, he ended up running away. And again, this is a child. He went to go find his mom. His mom kind of like turned him away. He didn't know what to do, so he turned to crime, and he started breaking the law, and he ended up getting put into prison. Because he got put into prison, he was actually in prison until he was about 20 years old. So when he got out at 20 years old, he was trying to set his life straight at that time. He ended up meeting a 17-year-old, I believe she was a waitress, named Rose, and he got her pregnant. And again, trying to make ends meet, he kept getting menial jobs, you know, trying to, and now he's got another mouth to feed. He decided that he was going to relocate the family, and instead of saving up the money to do so, he just stole a car and moved the family. And I believe they moved to California. And when he moved to California, again, he's doing little odd jobs here and there. And then he ends up, like, he's talking to somebody, and a cop happens to come by, and they run the plates on the car. And sure enough, the car is stolen, and he goes back to prison. And while he's in prison, his wife gives birth and decides to divorce him and marries another man. And he never really, as far as I could tell, nothing was really mentioned about him meeting his kid.
Yeah.
So he ends up going back to prison, obviously, and he ends up in and out of prison for a lot of things: mail tampering, check fraud. I guess the check was for $34 or something. It was some type of bond or something like that he tried to cash. He was known for pimping, which is a big deal. You guys remember that in the future. Auto theft, parole violations, and so forth. While he was in prison, he learned to play the guitar. So one of the interviews that I watched about a childhood friend said that when he would go to church, one of the only ways that he liked church when he was with his aunt and uncle was when he got to sing. So they said he was actually a very talented singer. He was very musically inclined. So while he was in prison, he learned how to play the guitar, and he started writing songs and stuff like that. Well, he was eventually released from prison, and I think it was for overcrowding. I don't remember exactly, but he actually asked them not to let him go, right, because prison gave him stability. He knew where his meal was coming from. He had been pretty much his whole life up to this point in and out of prison. He knew exactly what it was like. He understood it. So he asked not to leave. And they said, sorry, buddy. And they put him out. And at first he was like, oh, fuck this. No, I don't. No. Don't put me out on the street again. But by the time he got out, it was the 60s. So you've got the hippie movement. You've got people protesting the Vietnam War. You've got the, you know, free love and drugs and all that kind of stuff with the flower power and be free with your body and stuff like that. Everybody's got long hair. And by the time he got out of prison, he had a beard and long hair and he could play a guitar. So he fit right in. Yeah. He started playing music on the street. He was very charismatic. He started to make friends very quickly. He just started meeting people. And this was around the time that he started to meet his first two girls. So going to parties and mutual friends and stuff like that, he started to meet these women. One in particular, he definitely had a sexual relationship with, but I would suspect that he had a sexual relationship with all of them. One of the things to note was that apparently that's not really mentioned a whole lot because obviously the murders that he helped to plan were so brutal, but there was some mention of the fact that he would also molest young boys. So if you look at the ages of these young girls, when they found themselves in the sights of Charles Manson, they were all teenagers. 15, I think the oldest was maybe 20, if that. I don't even know if they were. Came from very religious backgrounds, Catholic and Protestant and so on. And they felt themselves like not really feeling connected. I believe that there was probably some religious trauma, which he and these girls could connect on. He showered them with love. He made them feel special. And so these women ended up being drawn to him. And I suspect all of them had a sexual relationship with him. He started to recruit members at this time, obviously the girls being part of it, and he called them his family. And supposedly the reason he called them the Manson family was because his family had let him down, their families had let them down. So now he was going to create this new family. They were a new family, a family that they chose to be together, which is definitely the start of a cult for sure. Mm-hmm. He would actually use the most attractive of the females that he would recruit to recruit others. So he would send them out to recruit people, and he ended up recruiting some guys. And the way that he got the guys to stick around was the promise of women. So I suspect that in the manipulation process of this whole thing with these young girls that just adored him and felt special, they were probably providing sexual favors as well to the gentlemen. I wouldn't even call them gentlemen. Wow. To the dudes in the group. What was that?
I said they definitely were. Did you did you read about him staying with I think it was the drummer from the Beach Boys?
Oh yeah, I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the stories, so like I said, he's sending out these girls, which I believe they were called the Frontage Girls or Front Road Girls. I think they were called the Frontage Girls. And basically it was, like I said, the most attractive ones he would send them out to recruit. Well, two of the girls ended up being, well, they were in this one location. He's got quite a few members at this point, and he convinces them to start going up and down the coast. I guess at one point he ended up trying to go visit his mom again while he was with this group. And again, his mom turned him away.
Right.
And he ended up trying to meet up with her a second time. Again, that was not very fruitful. So they were traveling up and down the coast in their little hippie van and peace and love and all this kind of shit and talking about, you know, he had his own things that he was spouting. If you ever listen to Charles Manson, we were actually talking about this before the show. He talks in circles. Mm-hmm. It is the craziest, like he makes me want to punch him in the face.
And but, not just in circles, but he like talks gibberish, like a lot.
But I mean, I have trauma because my own family and my biological father was fucking basically a Manson. Okay. He didn't murder anybody, but that's about as you know, that's the only thing that you could take off the table with that motherfucker. And I guarantee he talked like that. He to this day talks like that. To give you guys a little, to put it off on a little tangent, back in 2010 or 11, I had gone on Ancestry.com to try to find anything about my former last name, which is Galusha, which is my biological father's last name, so that I could just, you know, find family members. I did not want to find him. I wanted to find family members. My biological father somehow logs on 2 years later and ends up like sending me a message. And this message is like the most bizarre fucking thing ever. So it went something along the lines of, "If you're wondering, I am your father. I remember the day you were born. It was a warm, sunny day in Waikiki. And I got the notification that your mom had gone into labor." Mind you, I never asked him for fucking anything.
Right.
"Your mom had gone into labor. And I remember arriving at the hospital so excited to meet my little girl. And as the nurse grabbed my hand and pulled me off, I got to see my beautiful daughter for the first time." This motherfucker was not at the hospital very long. He was there long enough to sign the birth certificate. And then the 3-day waiting period that you're supposed to wait before you're allowed to go home, he didn't even fucking pick her up. My mom had to call her brother.
Right.
So according to him, it was the best day. It was a warm day in Waikiki. La, 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 la. I was so excited to meet my new daughter. Yeah, you forgot to mention the fact that you were fucking another woman while you were married to my mom the day I was born. And yes, you probably did get told by a family member that your daughter was being pushed out of your wife's fucking vagina. And you showed up long enough to name me on the birth certificate, a name my mother did not want. And then fucking left and never came back. Same shit. Same fucking Manson vibe. What's that?
What did your mom want to name you?
Mandy.
Mandy?
Yuck. Yuck.
I like Lola.
Mandy. I don't know what type of person I'd be if I was named Mandy.
Yeah.
There's a Mandy song too. There's lots of Lola songs, but there's a Mandy song too. Anyway, back to the story. Charles Manson talks like a sociopath, which is exactly why I can't. I was actually telling Lacey, I can't watch an interview with him. I want to punch him right in the face. Same. Probably because of my own familial parental trauma.
Right.
No, anyway.
It's hard to listen to him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's bad. So anyway, as he's recruiting people, he ends up meeting, let me go back real quick, because we're going to talk a little bit about the Beach Boys here in a second. But while he's recruiting, he ends up meeting this guy, Tex. Tex ends up being an integral part of why things went very poorly in the future for everybody. So yeah, they meet Tex. Tex sticks around because he's got an endless supply of women, and he joins the group. While they're going up and down the coast, they are, I think it's in LA. Two of the girls end up walking down the road. While they're walking down the road, they're hitchhiking because they're trying to get back to where the group is, which I believe, I don't even remember where they were staying at this point. But while they're in the car, they're telling this beach boy, Dennis Wilson, all about this guy that they're staying with and how amazing he is and all these great ideas that he has and blah, blah, blah. So he ends up arranging a meeting with Manson. Manson comes over. They end up hitting it off. They think that each other are the greatest people ever. Everybody in this entourage, which I believe at this point was like 15 people, mostly women, let's be honest, show up at Dennis Wilson's house. And they're just having the time of their life. They are partying. They are doing drugs. Manson is helping Dennis write songs. They're recording songs. They're playing music. They're just having the best time ever. And Dennis thinks that freaking Charles is just so good that he literally starts to introduce him to music execs and music producers and people in the industry and so on and so forth. So that he can be part of the music industry and even potentially joining the Beach Boys. Can you imagine if Charles Manson had fucking been a Beach Boy? How many lives would that maybe have saved? I don't know.
Who knows?
But he ends up, while he's there, meeting a record producer. And the record producer's name is Terry Melcher, I believe is how you say his name. Okay. So he ends up meeting a record producer, Terry Melcher. And, you know, he's hanging out with all these people. Dennis Wilson is trying to talk the other Beach Boys into letting him join the Beach Boys. And these guys are like, we don't like him. Like, we don't like him at all. There's something real sketch about him. No, he cannot join the group. You need to stop hanging out with him. There's something not right about him. You need to stop hanging out with him. And thank goodness they had such good boundaries.
Off vibes.
Yeah.
I think but, I would have ran away the second that every single person in the house got, gonorrhea?
Oh, I didn't read that. It's because they were all fucking each other.
They were having like huge orgies. But yeah, they all did. All of them.
This was when they were with Dennis Wilson?
They lived with him, yeah. All of them lived with him at one point.
Well, that would probably be part of the reason that the other Beach Boys were like, this is not good.
Yep.
So I guess there was a lot to the story besides probably the gonorrhea part. But there was a falling out between Dennis and Charles Manson, and they end up cutting ties, and obviously they don't have a place to live anymore. After they leave, the Beach Boys end up releasing a song called Bluebird Over the Mountains, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Manson swears that he wrote that song.
Yeah.
And that the music producer, Terry Melcher, changed it slightly. And they never gave him any credit, that it was his song that he changed slightly. And then the Beach Boys put it out.
See, and I wonder if there was more than one, because in this one, it says there's one that was called, Manson wrote a song called Cease to Exist, and they changed it slightly as well and renamed it Never Learn Not to Love. So there's more than one.
I'm not surprised, because he was recording and he was playing music while they were with Dennis. So I would really not be surprised. Because they put these songs out, though, Charles Manson was obviously real pissed, and he held a huge grudge, and this grudge will come into play later on. So now they have to find a new place to live. So one of the girls ends up meeting this old man, this blind old man who's very nice, and he has a ranch, and the ranch is an old movie set. And she convinces this old man to let her and all of her peoples that she's with stay at this ranch. And this ranch will also be fairly integral to what ends up happening after that as well. So supposedly this was just like the funnest time ever. They just thought that this was the greatest time. Obviously, Charles Manson is keeping these women drugged up. Well, everybody, but especially the women. LSD trips nonstop. He makes them do exercises together where he's reenacting that he's Jesus Christ on the cross. He even at one point says that he's Jesus Christ. He's preaching love. He's regurgitating other cult leaders' stuff that had been said in the past. He's talking about spirituality. He's basically reprogramming them while they're at this ranch. I mean, it's total brainwashing. What is that called? Not Agent Orange. What's the one where they hold your eyes open and they make you watch these images, and it's like a brainwashing technique? A Clockwork Orange on these people, where he's drugging them at all times and he's feeding them this information. One of the interviews with one of the girls said that while he had them drugged, he would tell them things like, you don't have any guilt. Guilt is not a real thing. Guilt is programming that society has put on you, and you don't need to carry guilt. So some people say that the way that things ended up the way that they did was because he was an idiot and he held a grudge, and it was his way of trying to redo things. But the book that was written about him by the lawyer was Helter Skelter, which had this huge conspiracy theory about, and I think, again, there's something in between. So I believe that he knew something was coming. Well, he did, because that actually comes up. So while he's at this ranch, he won't let anybody, like any of his followers, are not allowed to know what's going on in the outside world. They're supposed to forget their past. They're supposed to forget their family. This is your family now. The Manson family is your family now. You're not supposed to communicate with anybody outside the cult. I mean, these are all like part of the bite model. And he's telling them this stuff, but he's listening to what's going on out in the world. And he's hearing about some of the racial riots that are happening, some of the civil rights movements that are happening, and those types of things. He's also listening to the Beatles and the Beatles song Helter Skelter, which is the book that the lawyer wrote, is this conspiracy theory that apparently there's supposed to be this huge race war where blacks will overcome the whites. And he believed, Manson believed, that when the New World Order came, that these black people would be looking for a leader and that they would turn to the family for leadership. And he would essentially be the new leader of the new world.
Manson?
Yeah. Black people.
But what about all the other Jesuses he said are said to exist? He even said that there was a black Jesus in Florida.
They don't matter. Only he does. Because
he does.
Or maybe he would recruit them into the family. I don't know. But he believed that song was insinuating that there was supposed to be this huge race war where blacks would overpower whites, and that the only people that they could turn to when they were looking for leadership was going to be Manson and the Manson family.
Hmm.
So that's part of the reason he was brainwashing these people. What's that?
I said, I'm pretty sure that he's the last person they'd go to.
Yeah. This all of 5'2" little man.
Yeah.
Talking in circles. Yep, that's who they think they're going to turn to. 5'2" Jesus. little Jesus. Pocket Jesus. I think that's another thing, that he was really short. So he probably got bullied a lot. Even as an adult, he probably got bullied a lot. And he was very, very good at manipulating. So he surrounded himself with a bunch of sycophants that were just telling him how amazing he was all the time. Anyway, there's layers. This is like an onion. There's layers.
Definitely.
Anyway, so he is not letting them, like, he's not telling them. They were only allowed to listen to the Beatles music. They were only allowed to listen to Beach Boys music. Obviously. They weren't allowed to have contact with the outside world. They would have to do exercises while they were on drugs that would be like reprogramming them. And they would follow him without question. No questions whatsoever. And he would have them do things to prove their loyalty. And that's part of for some people, that was actually why they ended up having to murder, was because they were proving their loyalty. So Tex is there with them at this ranch. And Tex is one of the drug dealers that's supplying the drugs for the Manson family. So Manson can keep his girls, well, his followers, in line. And Tex goes to buy some more drugs from this guy, Bernard Crowe. Now, Bernard was a black man, and he shows up, and it's about $1,200 worth of drugs that he's trying to buy from this man. And Bernard says, this is how much it's going to be. And Tex says, oh, I don't have that much money. Can I go ahead and go, you know, take the drugs, and I'm just going to take them, and then I'm going to bring you them. I'm going to sell some, and then I'm going to bring you some money back. And Bernard's like, do I look fucking stupid? He's like, no, that's not going to work. And so Tex goes, okay, how about a trade then? I will have my girlfriend stay here. Then I will take the drugs and get your money and then come back for my girlfriend. Like, I love my girlfriend. I'm not going to leave her here. So Bernard agrees to it. But Tex doesn't come back.
What the fuck?
He does not come back for his girlfriend. He fucking leaves her there. So hours go by, and I'm sure that there was a real awkward conversation between the girl and Bernard, like, hey, I thought your man was coming back. And she's like, I thought he was too. Where is he? I'm sure that he's just lost in traffic. Where do you think he's gone? And 12 hours goes by, and he still does not show up. He's back at the Manson ranch.
Getting high.
I don't even know if he told Charles Manson, because what ends up happening next does not sound to me like Charles Manson actually knew what was happening. So one of the things that you need to know about Tex is his first name is also Charles, which is probably why they call him Tex. So Bernard is like, this dude's not fucking coming back. And he decides to call the ranch. And when he calls, he asks for Charles, not knowing that he has to ask for Tex. So Charles Manson comes to the phone and Bernard starts getting in there like, where the fuck is my money? I want to know what's going on. Like, if you don't get me my fucking money, I'm going to burn that ranch to the ground and rape all your women. Charles Manson's like, oh, no, you're fucking not. He gets a big fucking puffed up chest, goes and sets up a meeting with Bernard Crowe, shows up, shoots Bernard, takes the girl, and takes off. Now, I don't know if it was because Manson was just a racist, crazy asshole or what, but he thought he killed Bernard Crowe, and he thought that Bernard was part of the Black Panthers. I don't know if it's just because he was Black or what, but for some reason he thought there was a connection with the Black Panthers, and then now the Black Panthers were going to be after him. So he was terrified.
Right.
So because the Black Panthers are involved, he decides that he is going to see if he can get some help. So he ends up finding this gang called the Straight Satans that are supposed to like hang out around the ranch and provide protection. And as a like a trade, they're supposed to get drugs and women. And again, he's pimping out all of his girls.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not his special ones, but nonetheless, he's pimping out all these women. Well, they get some stuff from this drug dealer, and they give it to the Straight Satans, and something goes wrong, and the Straight Satans were like, this was shit, this was not good drugs, we want you to give us money, or you need to get us new drugs or whatever, because this is not okay, we're not providing you any more protection until this shit is done. So now Manson's got, he thinks he's got the Black Panthers on his back, and then he thinks he's also got the Straight Satans, which are probably another racist group as well.
The straightest people? Were they straight edge? Is that what it is? Oh, no, because they did drugs. Never mind.
No, they weren't straight edge. So he thinks he's got this biker gang on his back. And then on the other side, he thinks he's got the Black Panthers. And so he, in an effort to get this biker gang off his back, he's like, we need the money. We need to get the money back. We need to get them better drugs so that they can protect us from the Black Panthers. We need to make this happen. So he sends the two girls to go talk to the drug dealer to try to convince the drug dealer that he's supposed to, like, give them money. Well, the drug dealer said that the drugs were good, which you can never trust a drug dealer, but he had already spent the money, which in the 60s, like, I don't know how much money they got.
Right.
But I mean, in the 60s, like, $600 would have been, like, an entire year's salary, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It was not a lot. They end up going to the drug dealer's house, and they're keeping him there, and they're trying to get stuff from him, and they thought at the drug dealer's house that he had a stash of money. So they're gonna convince this dude to tell him where this stash of money is. Something to keep in mind while you guys are listening to this is the fact that Manson is growing more and more paranoid, and he wants to make sure that his people will be connected to him, will be wanting to be near him at all times, and he has to keep them in line. So supposedly one of the ideas was that he had to make, because he had already killed somebody, so now he's got blood on his hands, and any of his people can now turn him in. So supposedly he came up with a plan that he was going to not only get revenge, he was also going to basically try to get all of these people off of his back and then return the loyalty of his current members to him by making them do bad things. So supposedly that's part of the reason that we are now going to start seeing some murders. So I believe that the drug dealer's name was Gary Hindman. So he sent three people to the mansion of Gary Hindman, who Manson believed had a stash of money at the house. So he was like, make him give up the money. Make him do whatever you have to do. They tortured this poor man for days to try to get him to admit that he had the money. and he did not. So one of the members, Bobby, ended up stabbing him to death. Well, one of the things that's integral to the way that the Manson murders were committed was in order to get the Black Panthers off of his back, supposedly all of the members were told that they had to basically smear blood on the wall or leave some type of tag that would lead the police to believe it was done by the Black Panthers.
Smart.
Yeah.
Badasses.
So the most famous of the Manson killings would happen on 8 August when, like I said, Manson is starting to unravel at this point. He has killed somebody. One of his members had killed somebody. So now he's going to have his other members kill somebody. So he decides to come up with a plan, and he is going to get revenge on this music exec, like we were talking about before. So he tells Tex the plan, and he tells the girls that they're supposed to listen to Tex, that they're not supposed to ask any questions, that whatever Tex says to do, that's what they're supposed to do. And Tex is given all of the information. Like, why the girls are kept in the dark, I have no idea. But this was supposedly part of the plan. So they were supposed to go to Terry Melcher's house and kill everyone that they found. So what ended up happening was Melcher had no longer lived there. He was actually renting it to a famous film director, Roman Polanski, and his actress wife, Sharon Tate, who at the time was 8 months pregnant. So these people showed up in the house, and I believe that Sharon and one other person were in the living room, and there was people in some of the other parts of the house. And so the girls were ordered to go. One of the girls was ordered to stay with Sharon Tate, and the other girls, the other people that were with them, were ordered to go find everybody else in the house and bring them into the room. And they brutally stabbed everybody in the room. Now, the person who supposedly did majority of the killing at this time was the guy, Tex. Tex supposedly, in one of the interviews, one of the girls said that she just held the knife there and she couldn't get it to go down. Like, she couldn't bring herself, like it was frozen there. She also did say that before they went in, that Tex gave them a whole bunch of speed and methamphetamines and shit like that. So they were all hyped up on drugs. So they're all on stimulants, like a lot of stimulants, not like control your ADHD stimulants, like crazy amount of stimulants.
Yeah.
So they go in and they're already programmed, and now they're hopped up on drugs. And, you know, obviously there's groupthink that happens as well. There's lots of weird things that psychologists have studied with, like, people in groups and like this frenzy that's created. You've got Tex, who's like probably screaming orders. You've got a girl who cannot stab this person in front of her and then is eventually ordered to stab the person in front of her. And brutally stabbed. Obviously she dies. Everybody in the room dies. There's like, I guess the description of the room is that there's just blood like everywhere. And they write pig on the outside of the house in order to make it seem like, again, it's connected to the Black Panthers. So Manson decides that he wants to make sure that he's now going to get revenge on another person, and he's going to make it look like the Black Panthers. He's going to make sure that the Black Panthers get off of his back. And he's also going to see if he can get some money from these people so that he can pay off these biker gang people. So he decides to send the Manson family to another house. And the girls said that they were eventually supposed to hit every house in the neighborhood, but they ended up only hitting one house. And it turns out that the reason that they hit this house was because they ended up hitting the supermarket executive Leno LaBianca and his wife Rosemary. And so supposedly while the Manson family was traveling around, they were staying in the house next door. And for some reason, the LaBiancas did not like the Manson family, or they were being too loud or something, and they ended up calling the cops on him. Because they called the cops on him, they had to leave. So again, he's holding a grudge. Mm-hmm. So he tells them that they're supposed to kill everybody again in the house. But from what I understand, if I'm not mistaken, Manson never touched any of these people. That was one of the things. This was one of the interesting things that he argued the rest of his life, was that he should not be in prison because he didn't actually kill anybody. He did kill somebody. He killed Bernard. Yeah. But other than that, he didn't force anybody to commit these murders. People are like, no, you brainwashed them into committing these murders. You gave the orders to commit these murders. So for this second one, I want to say one of the killings, he ended up going into the house, tying the people up, and then coming back out, sending the family in, and then sitting in the car until they were done.
Right.
So he was there. He just didn't do anything. So again, just like before, they were stabbed to death brutally stabbed to death. And again, some stuff was written on the wall to make it look like it was Black Panthers. The final victim was a guy named Donald Shea, who he was a former film stuntman, and he was one of the ranch hands. He actually didn't like the Manson family. He thought that all these people were taking advantage of this poor old man that he worked for. Mm-hmm. So when the police started asking questions, because of it had to do with car theft. So that he always got hung up with car fucking theft. He was like an idiot with that.
Yes.
So Donald Shea ended up telling the police, like, hey, I think those cars that you're looking for are actually here. And then dude disappeared off the face of the earth. And then in 1977, his remains were found when a guy, Steve Grogan, which was one of the Manson family members, led police to where he had buried him 8 years previously.
Ah.
So initially the cops did not connect all of these things. They were just thinking that they were all isolated incidences. And then they finally ended up figuring out that it was the Manson people. And so while held in custody, family member Susan Atkins confided in her cellmate her involvement in the murders of two other prisoners. And the cellmate was like, hey, like, let's reduce my sentence. Let's make a deal. And ended up telling the authorities what was going on. And then Susan Atkins was, you know, obviously put on trial for it. The trial itself was televised. Manson would go on these long, like, crazy ass tangents. He would meet with the girls beforehand. Like, I don't understand why they were allowed to meet to talk about what they were going to do in court, like why his lawyer wasn't there and stuff like that. But supposedly he would make like a circus of it. So at one point he had the girls like stand up and sing. At another point he had them do something else. Eventually the judge ordered that they weren't allowed to be in the room while Manson was in the room so that he could control some of the circus. One of the things that is the reason that people believe the Helter Skelter story about this whole thing and not that Manson was just an idiot who was trying to cover his tracks was because supposedly the lawyer had, I don't know if it was the prosecution or the defense. I do believe that it was the prosecution, but it could have been the defense. I'd have to look it up. But he had an assistant in the room and everybody just thought that this dude was taking notes because he was like working as an assistant for this lawyer. Nope. He was helping this lawyer write a book. This lawyer walked in the door knowing he was going to write a book about this. And he released the book called Helter Skelter. And it had all of the conspiracy theory stuff all about Manson and the race wars and all this kind of stuff, which Helter Skelter is the Beatles song.
Yes.
So like I said, the trial was marked by a series of disruptions by family members, rambling speech. Like Charles Manson tried to basically what do they call that? Represent himself. And the judge was like, no fucking way. I'm not letting you do that. So He ended up having to have a lawyer. He ended up drawing an X on his forehead. So a lot of people know him because he has a swastika on his forehead. At first, it started as an X. So he drew an X on his forehead to say he was an outcast and not a member of society, kind of like the same shit that his uncle was spewing. And the girls in solidarity, the three girls that were also on trial with him, also carved X's onto their foreheads. And he eventually ended up turning it into a swastika, most likely because he was already a racist fuck, and he ended up going into prison, and he probably joined some type of Aryan gang in order to stay alive. He might even let it because he was that charismatic and fucking crazy. One of the things that Manson did say after he was convicted and sent to prison, because at first they were all supposed to get the death penalty, but I guess the death penalty was like removed during the trial. Like, it was in law that they were no longer allowed to do death penalty. So they all ended up getting life sentences. And Charles Manson was like, you know what you did here? You basically just sent me back to where I already came from. He's like, you didn't really accomplish anything. He essentially said, you sent me home.
Yeah.
You sent me back home. I mean, because right. He was already used to being in prison. He functioned well in prison. So he was like, okay, I guess I'll just be in prison for the rest.
First place. So
yeah. So what it says is an appeals process delayed the executions and the sentences were commuted to life imprisonment when California abolished the death penalty in 1972. So the publicity surrounding Charles Manson and his family failed to go away. In 1975, one of his followers, Lynette Sneaky Frame, was jailed for life after attempting to assassinate President Ford. So they were all kinds of batshit crazy. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, as I like to say. Manson himself remained in the public eye. He gave 4 TV interviews from prison in the 1980s, most notably with Dan Snyder on NBC News and Charlie Rose for CBS, the latter interviewing winning an Emmy Award. One of the things to note about this as well is he married while he was in prison. Well, no, he didn't. It says here that he didn't actually marry her, but he supposedly had quite the correspondence with women while he was in. I did watch an interview a really long time ago, one of those crazy rambling interviews again, and probably one of those NBC or CBS ones. And he talked about how he gets letters from women all the time, and he would be, you know, writing back and forth with women, and that he had several proposals, and one of them, I believe, was to a woman, Elaine Starr Burton. And so they began corresponding in 2007 when she was 17 years old. So again, this is pedophilic, okay? Mm-hmm. She later announced that she and Manson had become engaged. A marriage license was issued, but expired without any wedding ever taking place. The singer Marilyn Manson took his surname, while the British band Casbian are named after Linda Casbian, the family member who escaped prosecution by giving evidence against her former associates. Vincent Bulgozi, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, the prosecutor at his trial and the author of Helter Skelter, an account of the case, summed it up like this: the very man Manson has become a metaphor for evil. Evil has its allure. So Manson made 12 applications for parole, all of which were refused. Neither the court hearings nor a positive avalanche of subsequent writings have given any definitive explanation for Manson's motivation, or perhaps more puzzling, the motivation of those who decided to follow him and commit murders on his behalf. So I know that this is getting a little bit long, so I'm going to kind of wrap it up a little bit. I watched the interview with three famous women, Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Leslie Van Houten. These were the three females that were making the spectacle in court. And one of the interviews was with Susan Atkins. She actually talked about how all of the drugs and the programming, that it wasn't until she was in prison for about 5 years that she felt like she finally came out of this like fog and then realized what she had done. But in court, some of these women were cold behind the eyes. Like people said that they went from being almost like childlike and talking in very childlike voices to suddenly being like these cold, menacing, like creatures on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And how just like they could continue to flip this switch. Now, one of the things that I find interesting about that is, if you guys don't know, there's a trend going on TikTok right now that's called Turn It Off, and it's got some music. And when the beat drops, a woman is crying. And then when the beat drops, she's supposed to turn off the tears and look at the camera and basically go motionless. And what's happening is in the Black community, in the BIPOC community, they are livid about this because they're like, do you know how many women, white women's tears have put, you know, people of color in their deathbeds? It still happens today, but it was much more common back in the 50s and 60s. And so you guys are basically playing spectacles, and they're saying that there's other issues with this as well, which is obviously a person gets up on the stand and claims that she's being raped, and they can use that against them and say, well, obviously women can just turn it on and off, so you must be faking. So they're not going to believe people on the stand when they say that they've been raped. There's a lot of things that can happen. These girls are the epitome of turn it off.
Yep.
They, one minute they would be like joking and laughing, and then all of a sudden they would be cold and staring and like emotionless. And then again, they would be like childlike and talking and like they were scared and da da da. And then all of a sudden they're cold and you know, just crazy. And these interviews are like so rehearsed. They sound 100% like they're sorry. But as a person who's experienced trauma, I have a red flag radar like no other. You know, once you start to heal and you establish boundaries as a person who's experienced trauma, then when you get that tickle in your brain, I don't know how else to describe it. There's like a tickle that almost happens with me where I'm like, no, something's not right. Like they look normal, but I'm going to tell you right now, something is not right with them. Mm-hmm. I was watching these interviews and it was 100% like that. These women are saying all the right things, their facial expressions, but something was not congruent with what they were saying and how they looked. It was absolutely bizarre.
The one Linda Kasabian, she was part of it. She told people in trial that she was a witch. And then when they asked her if she believed that she was, she said, no, we were like made to believe. Cause they were always saying things like, I'm a witch, you're a witch, everyone's a witch. So she did say that the thing she did was related to witchcraft because they were all told they were witches.
Which was probably one of these things where they were all told that they were special and they had special powers and that they were, you know, they were.
Yeah, she says, I didn't have any witchcraft. I didn't really know what a witch was. I still don't. And then the guy said, so you were having delusions? She said, I guess. And he says, well, what you're saying is that you had feelings about being a witch when you took LSD? And she said, no. And she was like, I took it mostly for God realization and self-realization to find out if there really was a God and who he and what it was. And he said, did you find any self-realization? And she said, I can't put into words what I saw. And then he was like, okay, anyways. And so it just goes on saying that she basically just thinks that she's this witch, but she didn't have any magic. She didn't have any witchcraft, but she was still a witch.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I guess that was part of the exercises was that the people had to get rid of their egos. We hear this a lot on Witch Talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get rid of their egos so that he could fill them with what they were, the truth, what they really, that he had the real truth.
What they needed to hear so they could.
What they need. Yeah. So that they could keep listening to him. And probably what he told them was that they had special powers and that they were chosen and shit like that. I would not be surprised. Supposedly at the ranch, one of the things that they would do is pretend it was Halloween and they would dress up in costumes. So it really wouldn't surprise me if they all dressed up as witches and shit too.
Yeah. Some of his quotes. We're not in Wonderland anymore, Alice. And then one says, if you're going to do something, do it well and leave something witchy. You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy. And these comments and these quotes would come after asking like questions that had nothing to do with what he said. Like they would say something and he would just say stuff like, from the world of darkness, I did lose demons and devils and the power of scorpions to torment.
That's from Manson or that's from the girls?
That's from Manson. These are all from Manson.
Dude. And again, like if you were on drugs, you'd be like, oh my God, that was so deep.
Yeah. He says,
put total, so much into
total
it.
Paranoia is total awareness.
I gotta be honest. That kind of makes sense.
Someone asked him, who are you? And he says, I'm nobody. I'm a tramp, a bum, a hobo. I'm a boxcar and a jug of wine and a straight razor if you get too close to me.
Yeah, when he tells the story of his mom, he tells it as the first person.
Yeah.
He says, I'm a 15-year-old girl who ran away from home and found herself pregnant. And I'm like, you're a 15-year-old girl? Right. And the way that it started, he must have been saying that other stuff. He must have been saying, I am, and naming all these things, because it seemed like it started abruptly. Like, why did he just randomly start saying he was a 15-year-old girl that ran away from home? So he was probably talking about that and then his story.
Yes. There's longer ones, but yeah. Just like, no sense makes sense. Death is the greatest form of love. Sanity is a small box. Insanity is everything. In my mind's eye, my thoughts light fires in your cities. The real strong have no need to prove it to the phonies.
Okay, that last one is true.
It is.
I understand what he's saying.
There are things that he says that are like, yeah.
He's talking in metaphor. That's all he does is he talks in metaphor.
Yes.
So the whole, in my mind, my words start fires in your city. That's because he can control and manipulate people to do things for him. That's basically an admission of guilt to me.
Yep. This is probably my favorite. You people would convict a grilled cheese sandwich of murder and the people wouldn't question it.
Are you the grilled cheese sandwich, Charlie Manson?
Oh, yeah. There's many more. Many, 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 many more. But
so all these women, well, Atkins is the one that I watched the most interviews for, because she actually asked for an interview back in the 80s. And what she wanted to do was warn about drugs, because drugs made her do it.
Yes.
Like Manson had a hand in it. But mostly, like, when they would ask questions about Manson, she would say, oh, it was the drugs.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what saved you? Oh, I turned to God and I found Jesus. And he was like, do you care if you're going to stay the rest of your life in prison? And she's like, I don't really know how to answer that. And he's like, well, do you want to stay here? Do you want to be released? And she's like, he goes like, how do you feel here? And she's like, content. Yeah. So like I said, there was a huge disconnect. She was saying all the right things, but I've heard people say that I work in the name of God, because that's what she said. All I want to do is work in the name of God. I've seen people murder people in the name,
of God.
I've seen people enslave people. Well, not seen them. I've read, you know, history of people being enslaved in the name of God. You know, horrible things being done to children in the name of God. Like, okay, like you're in prison because you murdered, brutally murdered, and helped to brutally murder people. Yeah. And so I don't believe that you're going to make good choices, even if you're trying to do good things for God. And the fact that you say you're content to be in prison for the rest of your life, she's like, yeah, I'm just content. Because I know that, you know, I work for God, and God is here with me and all that. And I was like,
he loves me. He loves you. Kumbaya. Didn't you say
she wasn't even kumbaya? It was so flat.
Yeah. Like blank faced. Yeah.
It was just like, I do not believe that these people changed. I think he altered their minds forever, because they talk very similarly to him. When he would ask her questions, she would answer them directly, but some of the ways that she would answer was very similar to the way that Charles Manson would talk about how he views life and death. And they would have to actually go through death and rebirth exercises at this ranch and stuff like that. She claims that she had to be reprogrammed and that it took her 5 years to do it, that supposedly the LSD, like she was blaming the LSD. She was saying that acid and LSD had, I don't know if they're the same thing, but that acid and LSD completely changed her mind and altered her mind. And that she thought that when the trip was over, that her mind wasn't altered anymore, but she didn't realize until she had been away from Manson for 5 years and she had been in prison that apparently drugs can alter your mind for a long time, that even after you haven't had drugs for years, that they can have a lasting impact on what you believed while you were on drugs and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, so you're really not taking responsibility for what happened. You're just basically saying that you were programmed by drugs, not even by Manson. You were programmed by drugs and then the drugs made you do it. I'm like, that person needs to stay in prison forever.
I agree. Acid and LSD are the same thing. Acid or lysergic acid, diethylamide, so they're the exact same thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So like I said in the very beginning, is that the reason we wanted to cover this was because we had covered the cult stuff before. We're here for the cult stuff. And we had covered the satanic panic. Mm-hmm. This is a combination.
He essentially caused it.
Yeah. So he was considered a spiritual guru at the time, especially in the very beginning. He was very much into the lead with love and free your mind. And I'm going to show you the real truth and all this kind of stuff. And that's usually what cult leaders will lead in with. And then obviously he started to unravel.
Happy hippie stuff.
Yeah. He started to unravel. Very much like, what's her name? Amy? Was her name Amy? From Love Has Won cult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
The new one that showed up on TikTok, The Garden or whatever.
Yeah, I remember The Garden as well. Supposedly one of the Garden members is dead, if I'm not mistaken too.
Oh.
I thought the guy was? Or maybe they just said they haven't heard from him.
Oh.
Yeah. There's lots of potential cults that are happening on the internet. It's not just in Witch Talk. There's a lot of other places, but there's always this guise. And I was talking about this with Lacey before we started the recording as well, is if you listen to Manson talk, if you've ever seen those dudes that come across your For You page that have the long hair and the beards, and they usually have dreads, and they're talking some nonsense about, I had a dream last night. And my heart fully opened, and there was a pussy inside, and I saw God in that pussy. Okay, they don't really say that. That would be fucking hilarious.
Beautiful.
It was so beautiful. I don't know why he has an accent as well. I don't know why he sounds Southern. But that's my character. But typically they have no shirt on. They usually don't have a shirt,
and they have like the backgrounds that are like woo.
Yeah, usually there's either like
weird filter.
there's that, or there's plants, like some hanging plants, like they're in fucking Bali or some shit. Yeah. And they'll always talk some crazy nonsense about love yourself and look. And I'm like, I'm all about empowerment, but something about what you're saying is not connecting, man. Like, yeah. I don't believe a damn word that comes out of your mouth. And it's very similar to the way that Manson, there's this one guy, I had to block him. Every single video he had like the Indian music in the background, and he was always placed, and he always had his shirt off, and he was very tan. And I'm like, you definitely have some money, dude. You're pretending to be poor.
Yeah.
And he would always spout this stuff, and then the girls in his comments would just be blah, 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 blah. Love him so much. Oh my God. I need to hear this today. Oh my God. This is so good. Oh my God. I'm so glad I followed you. And I'm like, cult.
Yeah.
It's a cult.
Yeah, definitely.
So be careful out there, you guys. But the last thing I do want to cover is there's actually 12 murders that they believe. So these people basically, like, some people turned state's evidence on them, but a majority of the stuff, unless they had evidence for it, they nobody shared anything else. There was not any extra stuff. So let me read this to you. This is from an actual news outlet. Is it NBC that has the turkey?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an NBC News outlet. This was back in 2012, so it might have been updated since then. But as of 2012, the LAPD on Thursday announced it has opened investigations on a dozen unsolved homicides near known Manson family hangouts around Los Angeles. The revelation came amid a legal battle to obtain hours, approximately four, of audio tape recordings between former Charles Manson follower and convicted murderer Charles Tex Watson and his lawyer. So somebody said that we have an obligation to the families of these victims. Commander Andy Smith told NBC4, our detectives need to listen to these tapes and these tapes might help in solving these murders. News of the open investigation was first reported by the Los Angeles Times on Thursday, confirmed to NBC4 that LAPD officials. Smith told the Times that 12 murders they are investigating are similar to some of the Manson killings. Manson and his followers shot to infamy in 1969 after the murders of a pregnant actress, Sharon Tate, and four others at a Benedict Canyon home in the hills above Los Angeles. The rampage was followed the next night by the murders of Leno and Rosemary LaBianca in their Los Feliz home. The unheard recordings sought by the LAPD were made more than four decades ago after Watson's arrest for his role in the Tate-LaBianca slayings. LAPD's efforts to obtain the tapes was not known publicly until it was reported by NBC4 News in May, and Watson has been fighting to keep those tapes under wraps. Police believe they may hold clues to additional unsolved murders committed by followers of Charles Manson. Earlier this year, a court order authorized LAPD to take possession of the recordings, but Watson's lawyers obtained a stay order, effectively stopping the release of the tapes while his appeal is heard. The LAPD tried to obtain the tapes using a search warrant, according to the Times, but on October 9th, a federal judge in Texas granted an emergency order barring police from executing the search warrant at an office where the tapes were kept. For now, the tapes remain in custody of a Texas bankruptcy trustee who took responsibility for them after the 2009 death of Watson's original attorney, Bill Boyd. Boyd had made the recordings. Watson, who as of 2012 was 66, is serving a life sentence in California's Mule Creek State Prison in Ionia, Amador County, outside of Sacramento, California. So there are several other murders. And there were four that I had read about the other day. That was two females in one location and then two females and a male in another location, brutally stabbed to death. And there were some similarities. And the families are convinced that the Manson family ended up killing these people. And the reason that they're convinced of that is because all of these people had some connection to the Manson family in some way. Either they actually met the Manson family, or they were in the same areas as the Manson family. And like I said, these girls that killed, like, I'm sure the guy was the same, but the girls are obviously the ones that do the most interviews because people want to hear about women who kill, because it's such a weird thing for us to wrap our heads around in our society. They said they flat out had zero remorse when they killed him. And that was another thing. I was like, you had zero remorse at the time, but now all of a sudden you're sorry about it.
Yeah.
Like, that makes no sense.
No.
So I just thought that was interesting.
I thought so too.
So this is to say that careful getting yourself caught up in a cult. It's actually easier than you think. I was thinking the other day that I'm surprised. I was listening to a true crime story. I was surprised I wasn't sex trafficked. And that actually happens in cults as well. So now you know a little bit more that you might not have known about Charles Manson and the Manson family and his killings. We hope you guys enjoyed this. We do want to give a shout out to our Patreon members. There is an episode we will probably record. What was her name? Blance Balansky? Do you remember her name? The Russian lady. There is another potential cult leader. We're just going to make this about cults. What was that?
Mona.
What was that?
Mona. Is that the one you're talking about?
No. One of our members sent us that message about the dude that we were supposed to cover, but the dude was basically copying stuff from Balansky or whatever her name is, the Russian lady that wrote the occult books.
Yes.
So we will be happy to take any other suggestions that you guys might have. We are releasing the video versions of our podcast onto our Patreon. So if you guys would like to see those, there are also some Litha, however you want to call it, summer solstice recipes that Lacey put on there for you guys. There's also going to be some meetups that we're going to plan, Zoom meetups that we're going to plan in the future. And there's more to come on if you are a $5 AKA super supporter. And I do believe that we have one more of our astrology books left to send out. So if you want to join our Patreon, you can still grab one of those. Magic of I sent them to us. They are absolutely amazing. They have all kinds of cool witchy stuff in there, including how to plant by the moon, stuff like that. They're studying with the big giant eye on the front. As usual, we are going to post this on Instagram. If you guys have any suggestions, if you guys loved something about the episode, you can either send us a voice message on Anchor, or you can send us a voice message through through a DM on Instagram if you want. You can send us a message on Instagram. You can tell us what you thought, or if there's anything that you thought we should have included about the whole spirituality, witchy twist to this Charles Manson stuff. If there's a detail that you thought was interesting that maybe we didn't cover, we would love to hear it. And if you have any future suggestions, we would also love to hear those. As usual, we love you guys so much. We wouldn't be able to do this without you and your support. By the way, we are considered, because of your support, one of, according to listnotes.com, is it .com?
Yeah.
We are considered in the top 5% of podcasts for the world. So it turns out that that's out of 2,300,000 or something like that podcasts in the world. We are in the top 5%. And that is because of you guys and your support. And we love you so much. We thank you so much for listening. And yeah, we will see you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
All right, witches and witchlings, that does it for another episode of The Witch's Grimm. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with family and friends, or head on over to whichever platform you're listening on and leave us a 5-star review. We post new content every Friday. If you'd like to stay up to date or engage with us, you can head on over to our Instagram or our Facebook, or leave an audio comment on our Anchor app, where we might feature you in a future episode. And if you'd like to further support this channel, head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/thewitchesgrimm. Until next time, witches and witchlings, keep making magic.